Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns, and a happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Thanks for checking out this show on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Talking about your Cleveland Browns and their opponent, the Baltimore Ravens, which we'll get to in just a second. Usually what we do here, continuing to do so, checking out the injury report as we head into this game early in the week. Now, Jadeveon Clowney is limited. Let's go through the limited practice participants. Jadeveon Clowney with a neck, wrist, and knee designation. Still hitting the three-peat there. Still limited. Troy Hill, which is great to see in a limited capacity. With the neck injury, and A.J. Green as well back full practicing with the concussion. Good to see those two things. A knee designation for J.C. Tretter, keeping him limited. Sione Takitaki, a shoulder designation. Baker Mayfield did not practice as he had the left shoulder, foot, and now a groin issue that has come up out of nowhere. Others who have come up on the injured list as DMPs, Donovan Peoples-Jones with a groin issue, continuing to be a problem for him. Hopefully he can see that rectified late in the week, and he can play Anthony Schwartz, still dealing with his own concussion, did not practice. Jarvis Landry with the knee, Malik Jackson with the knee designation, also did not practice. And Tony Fields, once again with an illness that seems to be a weirdly common thread for him. On the Ravens side, Anthony Avert, there, one of their stronger corners with the thigh designation, did not practice in this one. As far as other DMPs, Calais Campbell dealing with a concussion, didn't practice. Others that matter, Patrick Ricard, DMP, Jimmy Smith with a neck issue, one of their corners, Chris Westry with a thigh, all DMPs, and then Tavon Young with a foot knee designation, didn't practice as well. Brandon Williams with a shoulder was limited. Devin Duvernay, one of their wide receivers with a knee chest issue, limited. And then Malcolm Brown or Hollywood Brown with a thigh designation, he was limited in this one as well. And then Josh Bynes, it was a linebacker for them, an inside backer, was limited. So two beat-up teams, as we know. We'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, for the Ravens, Averett, Calais Campbell, Westry and Jimmy Smith as DMPs, Tavon Young, those are guys worth monitoring because they're important parts of that defense. Otherwise, not a ton of news around Berea. The big thing that came out was Kareem Hunt and Jack Conklin come off the IR. You know, Kareem Hunt also saying he's definitely thinking he's going to play. Looks like he was moving well in videos. It's important to note that just because they come off the IR does not mean that they are activated officially. You have 3 weeks to get that designation. So Conklin coming off his dislocated elbow and then the strained calf for Hunt might not be this weekend, but they also have the bye week just around the corner too. So that helps. Kevin Stefanski said, I wasn't thinking it'd be a week where injuries like this, like it was. And we're not surprised, though, when you talk about Jack, type of player he is, you know, how tough he is coming back. So that's always great to see Jack Conklin maybe being able to relieve Blake Hance at the right tackle spot. So good to hear about both of those guys. We'll keep a close eye throughout the week if they actually end up coming off the list officially or not. It looks like Lamar Jackson obviously seems ready to go. Said he's 120% ready after a strange illness he dealt with, which was something that kept him out of the game this past weekend. They still found a way to win without him, but not even showing up on the injured list is a good sign for him. So that's all around Berea. That's all the news and updates we have for now. We will keep a close eye throughout the week and keep you updated. And our guest today, who I'm really excited to bring on, I always do this with Ken. I had him on before the season in the AFC study, AFC North study. He's really, really good at this stuff, does the same sort of angle that I do. He's at Film Study Ravens. If you're looking for a really balanced, non-fanboyish way of looking at things, sometimes these folks who do this stuff can get a little too invested in their team. And not view it through a neutral scope. I think he does a great job. Ken is a guy I look up to with this stuff. I try to mold a lot of what I do after what he does. A ton of respect for him. So Ken McCusick at Film Study Ravens. You can find his stuff, filmstudybaltimore.com. So check him out, give him a follow, and let's get over to our interview and get everything we can possibly get and learn about the Baltimore Ravens ahead of this huge Sunday night matchup.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all.
Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Really, really excited to get to Baltimore. I think it's been an interesting time for the Browns because they have still yet to hit their bye week. And when the Browns look at their schedule, I was like, okay, I got to get Ken on the pod, got to get him in here, but it's going to be a really like back-to-back thing. The Browns got this weird quirk where they go Ravens by Ravens. So I really wanted to get Ken McKusick in to talk to him about where the Ravens are. It's been an interesting season. Pumped to talk to you, Ken. How are you?
Hey, great to be on with you, Jake. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Let's dig in quick, man. Talk to me about the state of the Ravens. It has been, I think you could attest, and maybe I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but it's been a roller coaster of emotions between injuries and close games and wild finishes. Just give me your state of the Ravens as they head into this important AFC North game.
Yeah, they're 7-3. They don't really have any reason you'd expect them to be doing that well because of injuries, because of the nature of the games they played. They've barely outscored their opponents on the year, but Lamar Jackson has turned into one of the most electrifying comeback quarterbacks. And, you know, he's even out a week and Huntley, you know, buries the river card, you know, for them this on the last drive of the game against the Bears. So it's been exciting and been a lot of fun football. And, you know, we're basically all talking to each other as analysts in Baltimore and saying, you know, we can't take any more of these, you know, heart stopping games. So a lot of fun to watch, though, honestly.
Well, I think we might be in the path here to run into another one. The way Cleveland just kind of hovers around here, I'm not sure Cleveland's quite good enough to be able to handle this one, but should be interesting. I want to ask real quick with Lamar. You know, I think it's pretty obvious to see he's in the MVP hunt again. He's as good in this offense as anybody is at any position in the NFL. Is the feeling? This is just a generic question, but the feeling is he's going to get paid. What is he going to set the market at the end of the year? I think like that's the thing that's interesting to me is we know, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, he's clearly not going the ordinary path with the agent process. So it's like, right. I do wonder, is it literally give him whatever he wants stage? Is that where you guys are? Cause he's that gifted. I mean, it's special stuff.
He's I you know, not going with an agent is probably a good thing, although an agent can help mitigate some of the natural frictions that occur in these conversations. I think he'll be paid at the top of the market, meaning $45 million a year, probably a little bit more than what Josh Allen, which I consider to be the low end of what could happen. I think that whatever Jackson signs for, Mayfield is going to probably want something similar. We'll see if the Browns are really willing to do that. I know that's a big question right now is have they signed the other position players that already tell you they're moving on from Mayfield?
Well, that's the thing to me. I'll throw this to you, Ken, because I thought it was interesting. I heard it earlier in the year where this rash of injuries, although obviously not expected, never what you would want to happen, has given Baltimore a little bit of a glimpse of what signing Lamar is like when you have to let some talented players perhaps go. Are you comfortable with that number? Like, I know it's hard to always swallow that giant number in a cap situation, but the general consensus is like Lamar can handle that. He'll be able to uplift everything if they have to, you know, fit some cheaper pieces around him.
Yeah, they'll enter a period for as long as Lamar is still under contract then under these new terms where they have to basically turn over their personnel. The Ravens have been amazingly good at that over the years. They let guys walk, even good players, and they've consistently had that happen. And I always tell people that's the better position to be in. You mm-hmm. want to be in a position where you have choices about which great players you want to keep around, your young players, and some heartbreak that goes with losing some of those players you drafted and they're homegrown. And if you look at the 2018 draft, the guys they drafted around Lamar, they've made the decision on most of them already. They already traded Orlando Brown. They traded James Hurst early on. So, traded a couple of good players to get a second and really two second round picks back in that process. They are going to let some guys go in free agency, but Elliott is coming up on a contract. He'll be in some demand, I think, although the Ravens may get him back. Bradley Bozeman will be in some demand across the NFL as a very serviceable, not the best center in the league, but, in the top 15 or so centers in the league. And then you have, who am I forgetting? Anthony Averett, a cornerback mm-hmm. who may, really challenge towards the top of the cornerback money. He might make $10 million a year, in fact. So I think that the Ravens are going to deal with this, and they're going to allow some good players again to walk, and it's their natural way of doing it to accumulate comp picks, to make more good picks in the future. And I hope they're able to continue it. At some point, they're going to start making some bad picks, and it's not going to work out anymore.
I don't know when. We've been asking when that's going to happen. They don't seem to want to do that. So, like you said, it's a lot of faith in those guys to get it right. And they've done so well. Back to Lamar real quick before we kind of go. Well, we'll do this. We're going position by position. How's his year looked? I know he's had these comeback games and that's been great, but how has the passing game progressed the way you guys would like to see? General accuracy? What does it all look like in the performances?
Yeah, I think he's looked good. He's thrown a few too many interceptable balls. But the big thing about Lamar is that he's not lifting up the offense around him as much as he has in past years. And the issue with that is Lamar was a player in 19 who was making literally everybody on the offense better. But also you could even claim some people on the defense better because he was really controlling snap count and doing those things right. Now the Ravens don't have any quality running backs. And so other teams have taken the approach of basically saying, we dare you to run the ball with your running back specifically. We'll key on Lamar and we'll try and take care of your receivers. But our inside linebackers, they're gonna stop taking too many read steps. They're gonna stop getting themselves out of position. They're gonna play very gap-centric football and they're gonna do the things necessary to maybe give you a couple of yards, but the Ravens running backs have been very bad at meeting their rush yard expectations on a per play basis. They're both like about half a yard for Freeman, I believe, and over a yard for Latavius Murray, last I checked, mm-hmm. in terms of not being where they need to be.
Well, let's talk about those running backs. Obviously, losing JK and who else did you guys lose? Gus Edwards, who's a fantastic gap runner. Devontae Freeman, Latavius Murray, you've tried some different things. They're okay, serviceable. How would you label the play this year from those fellas?
Old. I mean, that's the main description. You don't want to acquire old running backs. And Le'Veon Bell was here for a while, and they thought they could get something out of some of these guys. But the thing that has really killed the Ravens, they've been very good at identifying good first year backs and rookie backs that are on other teams' practice squad, meaning guys that were only on the practice squad the previous year. And guys that were, you know what I mean when I say first-year mm-hmm. rookie. I don't have to explain that to your listeners. But anyway, they've been really good at picking up with those guys. This year, there were many fewer of those because the COVID year basically shortcut the draft process. And then a lot of guys didn't come out on schedule. And I think next year's draft is going to be terrific because of it. There's going to be lots of talent available. But the Ravens didn't have a lot of opportunities to scavenge the discard pile from a lot of other teams and find guys who were good. So that's where they ended up with these aged backs, and it has really hurt them. I mean, they've been not able to run the Ravens offense the same way.
Well, the wide receiver group, I think, is at least, again, I'm always talking from a guy who's outside looking in. It seems like some steps have been taken in the right direction by Marquise Brown. It does. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong there, but there are names. Sammy Watkins, I love Rashad Bateman. Seems like he's come on since he's come back. Been making some nice efforts. Talk about the wide receivers. Who's getting a bulk of the time? And a little bit of who's the future of that position for them?
Yeah, the future is certainly Bateman. Brown may get a big contract. He may not. It'll be interesting to see whether they can keep him because, you know, obviously a childhood friend of Jackson and somebody that they'd probably like to keep around in an ideal world. Mm-hmm. Bateman looks like the real deal. I mean, he gets to the top of the route tree. He can stick his foot in the ground. He has a lot of wiggle in terms of where he's headed. Has good hands. I wouldn't say great hands. He had a little bit of drop issue in college, and we saw that come up with an interception in his first game. Was injured at the start of the season. He's played very well. He's been one of the primary guys that Lamar is looking for, and Huntley in this last game that they won was looking for since then. So it's been very positive these last few games to have Bateman in there and being the primary target. Brown, good year. I'll go to the tight ends real quick because I think we can shortcut this a little bit.
Yeah.
Andrews, you know, certainly splits out wide a lot and has looked good. He's played more in line this year because they have such weak tackles right now, which is the Ravens' real problem. They're trying to chip and set block on the edge a lot, and that, you know, they've really had to do. I think that'll be a big factor in this game Sunday night, is exactly how they handle Garrett and Clowney, which are, you know, obviously to me the two scariest weapons on the Browns' defense.
It will be. And it's with Cleveland, the issue is along the interior right now. Their defensive tackle group, Malik Jackson and, you know, Jordan Elliott and Malik McDowell's made some nice strides, but that's the group that worries me. I know Baltimore leads the NFL in gap run percentage. Not a secret. It's how they love to handle things. Talk about the offensive line. I know you at least when we talked in before the season, had some promising interior options. I don't know what the tackle situation looks like due to injury, so maybe you can enlighten us on that as well.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's almost a tale of two things. So I score offensive line play on a week-to-week basis, and I score every block and do that. So the interior offensive line play been quite good for the Ravens this year. It's a lot of people would tell you, oh, they're terrible, they suck. It's really not true. Kevin Zeitler has played very well at right guard. He's been the glue that holds the line together. At center, Bradley Bozeman has played well. He's coming up on a contract year. The problem with Bozeman has been snap accuracy, and in particular, snap velocity has been down. And if I want to do a study on this, you know, using some good centers for juxtaposition here, but he throws this 12-6 curveball snap that Lamar Jackson is going down to catch it low, but it's also taking forever to get there. And you know, you can. A lot of people maybe don't know this, but you can record on your DVR and time things accurate to 3/100ths of a second if you just use the pause and fast forward keys. Mm-hmm. So there is the opportunity to look at this. It's been a real problem for Bozeman is that the snaps are just not coming in on time. And so the Miami game where they were playing cover zero all the time, snap was low. Jackson's eyes are off downfield. I mean, you can't make your hot reads as easily. Snap is late, you know, just multiple reasons of layers of suck. So at left guard, they have had Ben Powers there pretty much the whole year. Tyree Phillips got hurt in the very first game. He was supposed to be their backup tackle option. They went to Powers. Powers has honestly played really well. He hasn't had a truly terrible game as I score it, but he's not as exciting as an earth mover as Ben Cleveland is. Ben Cleveland, huge human being. He was splitting time with Powers for a while, and then he got hurt. And so he's going to come back, we think, this week. He's actually active last week, but we think he was kind of like an inactive. If you look at the Ravens' injury report, or sorry, their inactives, every single one of those guys is inactive and hurt. And if you don't have at least one healthy scratch on your inactive list, you don't know who on your active roster is actually not able to play.
That's interesting. When they like to move, let me put it this way, this kind of framework question. What does this group do really well? Is it limited to the gap run stuff? Is the pass protection been a major issue? I know you talked about chipping. Cleveland's familiar with that, what they've had their beat up tackle play too. I'm just kind of curious, when Baltimore is moving the ball effectively, what is working well for them?
So I think using faster tempo to slow down the opposition pass rush has been good. And the chip blocking under those circumstances has been quite good. I think other teams basically that have rushed four and not blitzed have been doing the Ravens a big favor. They've had a lot of trouble dealing with the blitz in a lot of these games. The Miami loss is incredible use of simulated pressure. One of the most absurd things I've ever seen. It was 8-0. Sorry, let me be clear. Cover zero with eight guys at the line of scrimmage on a lot of plays. But it wasn't eight men rushing. It was usually six men rushing, and they would drop two or even three, four on one play from the line of scrimmage. Adam Butler, a nose tackle, dropped to cover 18 times in one game. 18 times in one game. I can only say Wink Martindale would do that in an entire season 18 times, have an interior defensive lineman drop to cover.
And then they brought a safety a remarkable number of times too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically the Ravens were always in a situation where they were overloaded on one side and they had guys in the middle of the line with no one to block because they dropped, to cover. So bad situation, obviously not one they want to repeat. But I do want to go back to the tackle situation for a moment and apologize for fast talking you here, but I want to make sure we don't miss that. Villanueva has played poorly at left tackle. I'm sure he's going to be a one-year guy on a two-year deal right now. The one thing that is kind of been good is that he gives up a lot of pressure by bull rush that Jackson's been able to deal with. So if he mirrors the opponent well, Jackson gets bumped better than any quarterback you'll ever see. And he moves out of a bump extremely well. But if he gets beat to the outside, that's when it really gets dangerous and you don't want to see that. And when we look back to week one, the one game where they were getting pressure from both sides consistently with Crosby and Gakwe, the Raiders really gave Jackson fits in that game in terms of being able to deal with that pressure. But generally, if it's coming from only the blind side, Jackson does very well with being pulled, bull rush pressure from that left tackle.
It'll be interesting with Cleveland because so many times in the history of this 2018 on Lamar arrival has been his ability to continually break quarterback contain, and Cleveland has had no answer for it because Miles can do some of those things where he does bull rush, or Miles is pretty strong at either turning the corner quickly or he's going to bull rush someone in your lap, which gets predictable, which is not the end of the world for quarterbacks. Yeah, it sucks to have pressure on you at any point. Nobody wants that. But if you welcome the idea of, I know this is what the Chiefs did, that Patrick Mahomes did to manipulate it. They knew how Cleveland was going to rush them, used it to their advantage. I do think a lot of that issue has been with Cleveland is not having a plan for containing Lamar. And it has been a problem over the years. I don't know if they'll have a plan to fix it. I will tell you that the Browns' defensive structure, as you maybe know from the outside looking in, is the antithesis of what Miami, New England, those types like to do. They do not prefer to run man. They do not prefer to blitz. They prefer to play it safe. And it is a huge cause of concern for me because that approach is one that has now been proven to give Baltimore a fit. I expect them to obviously have a better plan for it. You can't have that game on national television and not know, hey, guys, teams are going to be doing a little bit of this the rest of the way, if not a lot of it. So they'll have a plan. I just, the mystery for me will be if Joe Woods, Browns defensive coordinator, thinks he can show up and do the exact same things they always do and get away with it, because I have a bad feeling about it, because I do think you can, the teams like New England who put 45 on them, the teams like the Chargers who put 42 on them, definitely knew the tendencies of how these guys are being coached, what their rules are based on formation, alignment, et cetera, and have taken advantage of manipulation. So how they play Baltimore is going to be fascinating to me. I know we'll talk on your pod about this too, but like that is the most interesting thing to me is Joe Woods willing to bend on everything he believes in, because if you don't and you give Lamar predictability, he's going to eat you alive. So we'll switch, talk defense. I think, you know, losing Marcus Peters is obviously a problem. You know, what they love to do, correct me if I'm wrong, is just a lot of seeing Baltimore over the years. We're going to simulate pressure. We're going to get in your face. We're going to walk guys down the line of scrimmage. We're going to play a ton of man. Still a top 10 blitz team, maybe not as blitz heavy as they have been, but still going to play a high number of man snaps. SIS gives them the third highest usage percentage of man coverage snaps. Are they still doing that? I've noticed some metrics about some big games that have been allowed in the passing game. Just general defensive thoughts this far into the season.
Yeah, they've had some breakdowns on the back end and they're basically coming from one of three guys who are doing them. Stevens, the new free safety, who is in for Elliott now, and Elliott's done for the year. Stevens is a guy they drafted in the third round. I think he was a little bit of a reach, frankly, at that point. The Ravens, I think, could have had him in round five, but maybe they figured out he could be had. He might have been had. He's a guy I think they want to be their free safety of the future. What he is right now is more of a strong safety, a slot coverage of a tight end guy. I mean, that's the role I really trust him on. I don't like him to play the back end, play his instincts and whatnot. I think he makes too many mistakes. They walked him up into the front of cover three some, which that's fine. He can do a short area zone. That's not a problem. Don't know if you know where he came from, but at SMU, he played three different positions there. And he would play them all during the same game, oftentimes on the same drive or the same series of downs. He would be switching among positions. It's the most odd thing. You try to scout the guy, and you have to look for his shoes because it's the only thing. The numbers, jerseys are unreadable, and you have to actually look for these bright red shoes. So it's I think he's got the potential to be good. But Geno Stone right now, who is a darling of PFF last year out of Iowa, has better back-end instincts. And I would like to see them move to – more usage of him, maybe early, on early downs where they want a back end guy. He's an ideal split safety for a cover two look on the back end that he gives you a guy who brackets well, and not only brackets well in the sense that he'll be right there jamming the receiver. That's what Elliott did. He's really more of a wait for the overthrow safety, which I really like. That's the Ed Reed type, where you're looking for the interception play after play after play, and you're really trying to optimize your position. And Stone's got much more of that than the other Ravens safety. So Clark's, I think, has been pretty good, but Stone is the guy that I think they ought to put some faith in.
Well, let's continue to talk about the rest of that back half. I mean, you talked about Anthony Averett, and seems like he's having some strong play this year. I mean, Marlon Humphrey, I respect, is one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, and you can enlighten us on how his year is going. And then Tavon Young, I think, is the nickel. So, yeah, how's that group playing collectively?
I play pretty well. I like the way Tavon has played. He's been around the football a lot. He's been healthy this year, which is a very important. Had a little foot injury. That always worries you when it's not an ankle, it's a foot. He's out of the game. You don't know. You know what you're thinking, what name you're thinking at that point. Averett has had one bad game. He had a really bad game against the Colts where they moved him inside on the field, meaning rather than having their left outside, he always plays right cornerback. So rather than have their X receiver out all the way on the outside the numbers, they really moved him more toward onto the numbers, or even a little bit inside sometimes. And that gave him a lot of trouble figuring out wiggle at the top of the route. And so he was biting on a lot of fakes, and he made some mistakes. Very good boundary corner, good speed, can stay with receiver. I mean, I like him, and I think he's going to earn a lot of money, but that was the one trouble he had. So if there's a Browns receiver who could do that, a Jarvis Landry or another player who's a really good route runner, that might be a weakness there to take advantage. On the other side, Humphrey's been good most games, but he had a trip to the bathroom against the Bengals and Jamar Chase, so he had a really bad game there. And Chris Westry just got destroyed in this last game, but he played very well until then. He is one of the most physically gifted defensive backs in the entire league. He's 6'4", very long, gets to the hands very well after the catch, like Humphrey, really, to dislodge the football. But also he has the speed and the makeup speed even to make up for some small mistakes, but he's been making some big mistakes at the top of the route, and that really showed up on the Bears go ahead TD this last week. So, I think he's a big part of the Ravens future. Whereas I think he's the reason they probably let Averett walk at the end of this year, is that they think Westry can take one of those outside corner roles.
It's interesting. It's Westry. I'm not sure is a name that many people outside of, covering Baltimore would have a great idea of. I've known about his athletic background and profile, so I'm not surprised to hear you say any of those things. So good name to know. Let's talk off-ball linebackers. I think it's touching first on how Patrick Queen's year two is going. And then it's probably, I know the Malik Harrison situation was rough. So sort of how they're supplementing it, Will, or I'm not sure, maybe was more of the mic. Just kind of enlighten us on the off-ball guys.
Yeah, sure. So I don't know how much history you want to go into, but I'll go real quickly. In 2019, the Ravens tried to go to Patrick Owosso and make him their Mike linebacker, coming out of a very effective three-player weak side linebacker platoon. And he provided a lot of things in that role. They also had Kenny Young, Mike Young, the ex-Oriole, but Kenny Young was doing some things in terms of rushing the passer, good downhill play. And they also had then Anthony Levine was a terrific dime back in 2018. In fact, in the game against Cleveland, particularly the 12-9 loss in overtime, he played very well in that game. Week before, he won the game against Pittsburgh with three fourth quarter drive ending plays. A lot of detail, but they tried to basically move Owosso to be the regular Mike linebacker. It failed miserably. By week four, and particularly after the Cleveland game with the 80-yard run by Chubb, they'd figured it out. And they said, okay, we can't have this anymore. We're moving him back to the Will, and we're signing Josh Bynes, and we're signing LJ Fort, and they gave them very large roles. But Bynes was really the two-down Mike linebacker that took over. Flash forward 2 years. The 2019 defense, amazing on-field regeneration of that defense during the season from really bad at 2-2 to great the rest of the year. In fact, probably the NFL's best defense from week five on. Flash forward 2 years, they went out and they got Josh Bynes again to save their bacon because the Queen was playing so poorly at the Mike linebacker role, really looked lost. Coverage, not knowing where to get to in terms of the gap, just problem after problem, terrible tackler. So anyway, they moved him to Will. His play speed has really increased. Bynes, his comparative play speed, and I always say this, Bynes ran a 4.81 40 a decade ago. And he is much faster in terms of play speed than Queen at the mic spot. And Queen's play speed is improved because he keys off Bynes now, and he's the trail guy, of course, being the Will player on a lot of plays. Mm-hmm. And that means he can key off that and really get to the play quickly. So both positions have improved by the fact that they went to this ancient player again to put in at the mic spot. So that's actually been an improvement this season.
That's good. That's good. I know the edge rush guys, I'm not sure if they call them rushes or sands or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure of the lingo of the playbook in Baltimore, but I know Odafe Oweh was drafted, still Tyus Bowser's still there, you know, signed Justin Houston. How's the edge rush group doing this year?
All three of those are doing pretty well. Odafe Oweh leads all rookies in pressures, I believe, still. If he's not, it's very close. Mm-hmm. But he's played very well. He's had some very big plays, including the forced fumble that won the Kansas City game. So he's done some things. He's a nightmare for anybody on the at tackle who's got shorter arms. And he's been a guy who's been a magnet for crossing the face, which he can do effectively with length. Mm-hmm. Crossing the face of a guard and drawing multiple blocks. In fact, there's a really big one earlier this year where he basically set up a sack by crossing and drawing three lions onto him at one time. So he's cartoonishly quick on some of the run defense plays. So he's done some positive things from that perspective. They don't start him. They mostly have been going with Houston on early downs. He's probably their best pure pass rusher. He's developed the most individual pressure events. Bowser's been very effective at sacking the quarterback the last few weeks. He had effectively what are four sacks in this last game, two actual sacks, another one that was negated by a defensive holding, and a fourth play where he took down Fields for a gain of six on 3rd and 11, forced a scramble from the pocket, chased him down, took him down and knocked him out of the ball game. So in my money, that's it for my money. That's a sack as well. So sack plus six on that play.
That's right. That's right. And then the interior too, it's Calais Campbell still there. We talked about this now. You and I have been talking on various pods for a couple of years. Matabuke, we're a huge fan of his work. How's the interior group doing?
His best defensive player at any position right now. He's extraordinary. And the Ravens are so fortunate that he's still playing at a high level. Don't even want to think about the possibility of something happening to him, because Wolf, very good player last year, and unfortunately they've lost him. They haven't got any snaps out of him this year. If they did, maybe it was in week one. I've kind of forgotten at this point whether he actually played, but he's now, they've announced he's not coming back the rest of the year. He's on IR. Brandon Williams has had a shoulder injury. Now, the Ravens have a long history of never playing the run well when Brandon Williams is out. So you stack up the games that he hasn't played and you get a very bad rushing result against the Baltimore Ravens. So he's been out and Justin Ellis has been taking his place, and he's actually played pretty well, which is fortunate indeed, but it'll be a real challenge for him against this Browns interior offensive line and all the quality they bring for him to hold the point of attack the way he has the last couple of weeks.
That's an interesting note, because with the way Baker's playing, the Browns have to run the football. I don't know if Kareem Hunt will be back. There seems to be some strong signs that he can make his way back this week and actually play in this game, but he is coming back from a calf issue. So you never quite know how ready a guy is or how effective he will be if he actually does get out there on the field, because those are so touchy. Before we close, I have to ask you this question, more on the funny, humorous side than anything else. You know, I just need to know what it's like to know when your kicker gets on the field, he's probably, I mean, like, what is that like? Is it the most peaceful feeling you could possibly have? I just want to know. We haven't had it since Phil Dawson, and even Phil Dawson wasn't even in the realm of what Justin Tucker is. And the kick, the Detroit kick, is it like, did you expect that to go through, or was it correlation? I just need to know. Give me your Justin Tucker, like, 2-minute rant before we close. I need to know.
Okay. So he's been terrific. He's obviously he's critical to any sort of thing. He changes the dynamic of how you have to play defense and your offensive choices when you have the football late in the game and it's within 3 points. So you're always considering that. But you know, he's not Superman in the sense that I really expected him to make that 66-yard kick. It was a perfect confluence of circumstances. Basically, everything you can have positive on a kick, except for playing in Denver, was present on that kick. Denver is the biggest thing. It's the ultimate factor in a lot of ways. Yeah. But they, you know, it was an indoor kick. It was you know, perfect 72-degree conditions. The Lions were completely backed off in terms of not really trying to block it. So all those things were positive. So anyway, the kick went off and the bounce was unbelievable. It's one of these iconic things that the NFL has with high def, has this great view through the uprights where not only can you see the kick and what's happening to it, you can't get depth perception on that, but what you can get is individual jerseys are very identifiable and the absolutely beautiful, you know, reactions to that kick. So anyway, that's 2 minutes.
He's from the outside looking in. It's just one of the, it's like having a feature in a car that nobody else has, you know, like with the first cars with heated seats or something. He's just such a luxury. And it's really
ludicrous mode.
We are super jealous as we watch from afar, because that guy's so fun. I will say too, yeah, your point about the depth of kicks and like when they hit the cross, it's gotten even the announcers lately. This year I've seen announcers think a kick has gone through when it's landed 3 yards short. It's just the funniest thing to watch people struggle with that. Even dating back, I think there was the Cleveland Baltimore game where Phil Dawson hit the, what is it, the stanchion there in between?
Yeah, I had to bring this up again. Yeah, it was the support in the back behind the crossbar. Yeah.
That's wild. This is great, Ken. I know that the listeners of this pod truly appreciate your insight, which is unparalleled in your market and gets people prepared. And we're excited. You know, it's been a weird season for Cleveland, and I'll talk on your pod tomorrow. But, you know, pretty excited about this game because it's got huge implications for both sides. You know, these two games, it's going to be weird because I know you guys do you visit Pittsburgh, or does Pittsburgh come to Baltimore in between these two Browns games?
Now I have to look that up here.
That's okay.
The answer is yes.
Yes. It's one of those. One of the two. So
no, they're at home against the, no, they are at the Steelers. Yes.
Interesting stuff. Well, Ken, thanks again so much. And like I said, we might be talking to you in a couple of weeks. We'll see what shakes out, but I know everybody appreciates your time tonight.
All right. Thanks, Jake.
Thanks for joining us today. I hope you guys have a fantastic Thanksgiving with you and your family. It's my favorite holiday. Love the food. Love the get together with family, the focus on that. Turkey, stuffing, Thanksgiving, everything, man. Mashed potatoes, macaroni and cheese, you know, even the green bean casserole, believe it or not. I'm all about all of it. Don't skip any of it. Enjoy your time with your family in all seriousness. I'm very thankful for you guys as listeners, thankfully for your support and for everything you do for this podcast and the OBR. Appreciate you guys very, very, very much. Again, enjoy your Thanksgiving with your family. We don't get enough time like this. So stay safe. Hug the ones you love. Send thanks. Send anything you can to those who don't get the opportunity to see their family. And just enjoy each other. Thanks again so much, guys. We'll catch up on Friday with John Colosimo. Until then, have a great Thanksgiving and go Browns.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.